Hello everyone, this is Maul from Grace from the Sports Gazette, here for our very first episode covering the Six Nations. What an opening weekend of rugby we have had, with Ireland dusting off the World Cup cobwebs with a magnificent victory in Marseille. England coming away from Rome with a narrow 3-point win against a battling but much improved Italian side. Before a Six Nations classic in Cardiff, as Wales almost completed the comeback of all comebacks, from 27-0 down to lose by a single point against Scotland. I'm your host, William Thurtle, and I'm joined here today by Henry Ollis Brown and Toby Reynolds. But before we get into the action, it's only right to start the podcast here today by paying tribute to the late, great Barry John, the king of Welsh and worldwide rugby during the late 60s and early 70s. I actually went to the same secondary school as Barry John in the Gwendraith Valley and can confirm that he was still worshipped in the community even 50 years after his playing days. A true great. Rest in peace, the king, Barry John. Okay, and let's start with the first match then on the Friday night. France took on Ireland in Marseille. It was an absolute blockbuster of a match to start off, with Ireland running away 38-17 winners. What do you think of the first match then, lads? What were your thoughts?
I mean, you didn't know what to expect from this match. Like, France at home in Marseille, you're so used to seeing them in Paris, but seeing them in Marseille is a completely different beast, and we sort of saw that. No Dupont, and it was visible. Like, Luku could have had the game to make that shirt his for the foreseeable, and I think he just struggled.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Dupont not being in the French side, it was really the standout story going into the tournament itself, with, of course, Dupont now heading off to the French Sevens camp before the Olympic Games in the summer. So, Toby, do you think that he was the main reason why France faltered against Ireland?
I wouldn't say it's the main reason, necessarily. I mean, it's obviously a huge loss, as I mean, any team who loses their best player, and arguably one of the best players, if not the best player in the world, is going to be a big loss. I mean, I think everyone kind of expected Luku to be a bit better. He was slightly underwhelming, I thought. Didn't really do the basics well, which is kind of what you really need from a scrum half. You add in as well, I mean, Jalibert is obviously a great deputy to Untermack, but to lose your sort of 9-10 combo, which probably made France look the strongest team going into the World Cup, to have neither of them at the Six Nations straight after, I think, is always been a big issue. And yeah, I think having Dupont was a big factor, but France just didn't really seem to turn up. And then having, you know, a sin bin in the 9th minute and a red in the 31st, that's definitely not going to help either.
Yeah, of course, Paul Williams getting sent off was not the ideal situation that France were looking for. But let's not dwell, perhaps, on France's lacklustre performance. Ireland were absolutely in scintillating form, right? Jack Crowley, he stepped right into that fly half position that Johnny Sexton, of course, has made his own over the past decade or so. But with Sexton retiring, I thought Crowley really looked a suitable replacement. What were your thoughts then, Henry, on his performance?
I mean, he was outstanding. We sort of didn't know what to expect, but the game was his to take, and he sure as hell did that. In fairness, France were in the game for a lot longer than you necessarily would have thought just from looking at the scoreline. Like, final score 38-17, but it didn't feel like that for large parts of the game. France was still in it with a red card until the 60th minute, but then Jack Crowley just took the ball by the horns and won the game.
And I think another aspect of Ireland's brilliant performance in Marseille was that second row pairing of Joe McCarthy and Taj Byrne. I just thought they were absolutely brilliant, and they really set the foundation for Ireland's performance on the day. I saw a series of stats that were put up on Six Nations Rugby Special last night, and it essentially showed that McCarthy and Byrne were number one and two for more or less all of the
different metrics that were set up for the weekend, from most meters per carry, game line successes, dominant tackles, defenders beaten. You know, they were really on red hot form. So Ireland looked brilliant. No World Cup hangover. But that, of course, was the case then, for Italy, who looked like they'd put those last two games in the World Cup to bed, where they conceded 22 tries against New Zealand and France in those last two group games. And I thought they really looked back to their best against England in the first match at the Stadio Olimpico. Tob, what were your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, no, Italy were fantastic. I mean, it was sort of reminiscent of their victory over Wales a couple of years ago, and they just were so fluent going forward. Seemed to manage the game really well, which has always been an issue for Italy since they joined the Six Nations, really. Never quite having the talent or the game awareness, because they've never been in situations before. And I mean, they're unlucky to lose it in the end. To be up at half time, I'm sure they'll be kicking themselves. They will 100% know they could have won that. But I mean, the England side are obviously very strong. They know how to win games, they know how to manage games. And Italy just, I think it was probably the first 10-20 minutes of that second half, they just weren't quite on it, and England clawed their way back into the game. I think it'll give them a lot of hope going forward, which is going to be the key, really. The fact that they know that they can compete now. And I think they've known they can compete for a couple of years. It's just they haven't really proven it. And I think this game, to be 3 points off victory, or off a draw and a try away from winning, having outscored England as well, they know that they're really in competition. I mean, there was a lot of talk about going down to Five Nations again before the tournament. I think most people understood Italy were going to come back into it, and I think even though they've still outperformed what a lot of people expected.
And of course, one of the main reasons behind this sort of revival then is really down to that domestic core, which is principally the Benetton group of players. And of course, Benetton are doing absolutely fantastically in the URC this year. They're currently placed second, only behind Leinster of all teams. But they've really, you know, impressed. And a lot of the key players in that Italian side do now hail from Benetton Rugby itself. But Henry, I know you're an avid English fan. You came away with the win in the end, but were you impressed with England's performance?
I think it was a game that, either way it went, it would have felt fair. If Italy won, you couldn't really have any gripes about it. They'd have deserved it. It's a New England side. Probably the weakest part was our defence, but with the new defence coach, Felix Jones, we know what he can do. He's essentially won World Cups for South Africa with that defence. So I don't think that's too much of a worry. England actually looked like they had quite a strong attack, especially just free-flowing ball. I think the player that I was really impressed with, actually, from the Italy side was Tommaso Allan, though, because he's a fly half. He only actually really started playing fullback about 12 months ago for Harlequin, sort of stepping in when there was injuries. And then he sort of started playing there for Italy. And now he's actually sort of made that 15 shirt his own, essentially playing as almost a second fly half rather than a traditional 15, but also being able to cover that position. Obviously, scored, kicked the goals and scored a try of his own. He's definitely probably the player of the match for me.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk over the years, hasn't there, about Italy's stamina. It always used to seem then, going to the last 20 minutes, that you were guaranteed two or three tries as Italian bodies started to tire. But that doesn't look the case anymore. I thought Italy's stamina was fantastic throughout the 80 minutes. And I can really see them causing a shock during the tournament. I thought it was going to be against England in that match. But Tob, who do you think that Italy are going to be targeting then over the next four matches?
I think they'll be going for all of the games, really. I think Italy in past have targeted games. I mean, when was it, 20, 2019 when they came up with the ingenious ruck plan where they didn't get involved in rucks and weren't there for offside, and that was unbelievably clever. And I think they almost back in sort of 5-10 years ago, they were targeting games like that where they would use these random extreme tactics to get at singular opponents, whereas I think they have a much more well-rounded team. And I mean, I think, as Henry mentioned, Tomáso Allan at 15 really helps with that, because alongside Garbisi, or both Garbisis now, they really can control the game a lot better. They have Brex, who is an unbelievable player in defence, in at 13. And I mean, they're missing obviously a couple players through injury. Is it Caputo?
Yeah, Caputo.
On the wing, who is just has is just that Rhys Zamek kind of player. He has something about him that creates something out of nothing. And yeah, I mean, they have a so much better all-round team now, which is great to see. And I think they will be looking, I think Wales will be the big game for them, knowing that, and I think that could be an extremely exciting spectacle, because both teams, going from what happened in the second half, will be looking to play, you know, free-flowing attacking rugby. But now I've said that, I guarantee it'll be, you know, 3-0 victory, scrums galore, knock-ons, kicking for touch. But yeah, I think that'll be the game they probably feel most confident about. Scotland, I'm sure, after the weekend performance, they probably think they can get at as well. I think France and Ireland might be a step far, depending on how France can fight back after their loss on the weekend.
Of course, Italy had a couple of good performances actually against France and Ireland in last year's Six Nations, so who knows, perhaps they'll replicate that. But just to touch again on England, Henry, do you think that there was a sense of a post-Farrell era starting to develop in the way that the side played and the way that the sort of back line attacked the match?
I don't know if post-Farrell is sort of the right term to use, almost post-Eddie Jones. The journey through to the World Cup was very much sort of, okay, let's see what we can do with what we've got. And now this is really the time where Steve Borthwick can come into his own, can actually create the team that he wants and build the identity that he wants. I think, as I said, the defence was a little bit lacklustre, but we knew that with a new regime, it's going to take time to bed in. So that's not too much of a worry. And the fact that England can concede 3 tries to Italy and still come away with a win is testament to actually the fact that we've got quite a solid attack now. George Ford kicking through the penalties, just keeping the game going. I think I'm not too concerned. I think this, as you said, post-Farrell era is probably quite an inaccurate term to use, but maybe a post-Jones era.
Right, yeah, interesting. Well, let's move on from the Italy-England encounter to, well, I don't like using clichés, but there's only one cliché that I can use for the Wales-Scotland match, and that is a game of two halves. Oh, the difference in quality from both sides, and from the first, where Scotland absolutely dominated play to take a 20-0 lead into half-time, and I was surprised, to be honest, that it wasn't more. But the way that Wales reacted in that second half, and the substitutes who evidently had a big effect on the state of affairs, it was just absolutely stunning. I was watching the game myself at the London Welsh Centre, and God, the reaction after that third try went down. I was out of my seat anyway, that's for sure. But let's just have a deep dive into the match itself. First of all, Scotland in the first half, they looked like a team that meant business, right? Toby, what do you think that really propelled Scotland into that 20-0 lead in the first half? Was it Wales' slow start, or was Scotland really on top for you?
I think Scotland were on top. They seemed to bring back form that they'd lacked at the World Cup, I think, before the second half. They slipped back into it. Yeah, I think they seemed to be dominant. Well, they were dominating really comfortably. They just seemed to manage to find their way through every opportunity. Finn Russell at 10, I thought, played very well in that first half, just commanded, very calm. Tuipulotu as well, inside centre, just is an absolute machine, I think, alongside Hugh Jones. They have a very, very good centre partnership. And yeah, I think they didn't really seem to have any fear in their way they were playing. And then once they took the foot off the pedal in the second half, and they let Wales into the game, it sort of all seemed to come flooding through, I think, in the fact that they then were, once they were on the back foot, it almost felt like sort of days at Cardiff in the past when they were struggling against Wales and they hadn't won in 20 years in Cardiff. And yeah, sort of, I think once they let Wales back into the game, I think Scotland were sort of thinking, oh, are we going to bottle this yet again? And they just about got over the line.
Yeah, before we move on to that the almost comeback of that second half, I just wanted to have a quick sort of comparison between the fly halves that were playing in the first half. So it was Finn Russell up against Sam Costello. Now, Sam Costello was hooked early into the second half for Ewan Lloyd. Henry, Sam Costello wasn't really at the races for the first half, wasn't he? With one particular Rugby Pass article giving him a 1 out of 10 rating. Do you think he deserved that rating? And what do you think Russell brought to the Scotland side that really allowed them to dominate proceedings?
I think one of the big issues that Wales have got to tackle with this Six Nations is the role of fly half. They're without Bigger, they're without Anscombe. Like they need a new fly half that can step in, that can be their talisman for the next however many years. And they don't know who that is yet. Costello, sort of, the shirt was his, but he didn't ever feel comfortable in it. And then Ewan Lloyd comes in. He's not really a fly half. He sort of dabbles there a little bit. I think he has played a lot more of 10 this season, but he's sort of played on the wing. He's played centre. He's played fullback. He's played all over the park. And he just sort of stepped in and made it his.
Look, Ewan Lloyd did bring new energy into the second half, but I think the player that really impressed me and a lot of Welsh fans was Thomas Williams. A player who I really thought would start the match actually at scrum half, but the way that he sort of attacked that second half, I think it really rejuvenated Wales, who was down in the dumps, in all honesty, at half time at 20-0. But yeah, I really think that Thomas Williams, alongside also standout performances for Aaron Wainwright and Rio Dyer, I thought they really sort of pushed Wales forward in that second half and showed that Wales are a threat to be reckoned with as the Six Nations goes forward. Toby, what do you think are the main areas that Wales will be looking with Twickenham in mind for next week? What will Wales be hoping to improve on with regards to the big turnaround from the first to second half performances?
Yeah, well, I think if they play like they did in the second half, they'll be more than happy. I think that's going to be the key, really. They just didn't really seem to have that intensity. And I think, as you mentioned, Wainwright, absolutely crucial. His ball-carrying ability really shone through in that second half, I think. Wales had stats up here. They had double the number of carries in the second half. They had almost triple the number of dominant collisions. So many less errors, so much better conversion rate as well. I think once they got into the red zone in the first half, they didn't really look like they were going to score that often, and well, they didn't score at all. Whereas it seemed like unlikely they weren't going to score in the second half. They were just so much more aggressive with the ball and assertive, which I think was absolutely key. And yeah, Wainwright, I think, was absolutely crucial to that. And I mean, I saw a little clip of Sam Warburton talking about it, and he is absolutely huge, which I don't think anyone realises, but also his footwork, he just allows himself to get into the best positions to really attack the collisions where possible. He very rarely loses a collision, or at least very rarely lost a collision on the weekend, which I think is absolutely crucial for any number eight. And I mean, I kind of thought without Talupe Faletau, it was going to be tough for Wales to have a sort of big ball carrying number eight, and Wainwright stepped right in, and there's going to be conversations about what Wales' back row might look like when Faletau's fit, when, you know, Captain Jack Morgan is fit as well. So with Tommy Reffel as well, he had an unbelievable game. I mean, I don't know what you think of it all, Will, but I thought they were absolutely fantastic, that Welsh back row.
Yeah, I mean, Wales traditionally have had a, you know, a superior back row with, God, I'm thinking of Sam Warburton, you know, he was an absolute stalwart of the back row. Jack Morgan now as well. God, he had a strong World Cup, didn't he? Shame he wasn't available for that first match. But yeah, I think Wainwright slotted right into that number 8 role, and Wales really requires a strong ball carrier at number 8. I mean, any international team does, but I thought the way Wainwright applied himself was commendable. However, if we sort of strip back the whole performance, I think one of the main aspects of the second half revival was the sort of the change of the guard from Warren Ball, which relies on, you know, heavy physical ball contact, ball carrying, to sort of a new brand of rugby, I suppose, with Johan Lloyd coming on. We've got the exciting wingers of Rio Dyer, Mason Grady came off the bench. I thought he was dynamic, you know, 6'5". He's a big, big ball carrier as well. George North, he's also going to hopefully come back into the Wales centre partnership with Nick Tompkins next week. So yeah, I think there's a real scope for Wales to sort of remodel the way that they go about their business in the Six Nations, and sort of in the period now leading up to the 2027 World Cup. But yeah, Henry, I mean, I think we've just got to touch on it now, haven't we? The big match next week. England Wales, what are your thoughts? Who do you think's gonna bring the energy to the match? Are Wales gonna be able to replicate that second half performance?
Well, England always start their Six Nations slowly and they build into it. So for England, the way that it's all formatted this year, starting Italy, then going on to Wales, before leading up to Ireland and France later on, that's probably the way they want to go into it, so they can build momentum and build a stronger side. I think I've said to you before, I like this Welsh team. I think they offer a lot of excitement. Players like Thomas Williams, Nick Tompkins, Jack Morgan when he comes back fit. Don't think that'll be during the Six Nations. Aaron Wainwright, they're players that you can build a team around. And with this young crop coming through, I think if Wales can sort out their issues at fly half, they could be a real contender next weekend, or this weekend rather. I think England are just going to get stronger as that defence starts to settle in, the attacks bedding in as well. I think England will become more of a threat as it goes on, but I think this is still probably a weakened England side as it comes in. Come next year, it'll be a much different side, even with the same players, even with the same experience. I think, yeah, Wales England this weekend, it could go, I'm edging England because of course I am.
I thought you might.
I guess you're going Wales.
Yeah, I think we've got a chance, eh? But no, I think the way that Dav Jenkins also stepped into the role of captain in the absence of Dewi Lake and Jack Morgan was really commendable. Toby, of course, the big one this weekend, Wales England at Twickenham. Do you think he's the man to lead Wales to another famous victory at Twickenham?
I think it's definitely on the cards. I think I'm just about favouring England, unfortunately. I think if the second half Wales show up, 100% they win. If it's the first half, they're obviously going to lose. That England side just had a bit more consistency. I think they have a lot more experience, or they definitely have a lot more experience in the side as well, which is absolutely crucial for big games and an away game as well for Wales, which I think wouldn't help. I think if it was the Millennium Stadium, it would be maybe a different story. But I think just the fact that, you know, having George Ford at 10 is always going to be useful, and that could be the difference, that he is so experienced, knows how to manage a game compared to whether it is Costello or Lloyd at 10 for Wales. I think even just the fact that you don't know who's going to be starting at 10, I mean, the squad might know and the camp might know, but it puts a bit of doubt in the mind of the fans perhaps and the pundits. So I think that's just maybe the difference maker, and a fully fit Wales yet again makes it a bit more interesting. But I think, yeah, as you mentioned, a few injuries as well means it's probably going to swing the way of England, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll be roaring Wales on from the stands, that's for sure, come next weekend. So yeah, the other matches that we've got coming up, we've got France against Scotland, followed by Italy against Ireland on Sunday as well. How do you see those two panning out? Scotland-France, it's going to be a blockbuster of a match, isn't it?
it's going to be tasty. Scotland, we've seen what they can do. Finn Russell was absolutely on fire at the weekend. And France, they're going to want revenge. They're going to want to prove why they're the team that should be favourites for this Six Nations. They had a lacklustre showing against Ireland, and they've just got to put that behind them now. I think Scotland, with it being in Murrayfield, with it being in Edinburgh, I think I could see them doing it. But if France show up, as the old cliche is, you never know which France is going to show up. But if France do show up, if Luku can have a stormer at nine, I think France should be fine, but it'll be a close match. I think it'll be one team gets 5 points, the other team gets 2 points.
Yeah, I mean, that French back line is primarily built around the Bordeaux-Bègles back line with Luku Jalibert with that half-back partnership, and then of course you've got Penno, Moifana, Bialbiari coming off the bench on the weekend, and they have been having an absolute stormer in the top 14 so far this year. That wasn't quite replicated against Ireland, but you've got to bear in mind that that Irish defence is absolutely lightning off the line, and they didn't give that French back line a moment to breathe, didn't they? Do you think, Toby, that they'll have more of an opportunity perhaps to attack the Scottish defence, just like we saw with Wales during the second half?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's going to be where they're going to look to try and hurt Scotland, aren't they? And I mean, Scotland showed their weaknesses by allowing Wales to carve through them in that second 40. If any of them have any opportunity and any chances, they're gonna take it, and they're gonna slice through Scotland. I mean, Scotland will be looking to do the same, I'm sure. They're both very, very attacking, aggressive teams. So it could be again another exciting game. I mean, we had three great games in that first round, and could have another three for the ages in this round as well. I mean, not to mention the Ireland Italy. Who knows what will happen there? But yeah, I mean, Scotland France. It's going to be an exciting one to watch, and probably a few tries.
Oh yeah, there's always a few tries in that match, isn't there? I mean, with the final match then as well, Ireland-Italy, I expect the exact same, to be honest. I'm expecting it to be a bit of a try-fest. Unfortunately, not in Italy's favour, as far as my prediction goes. I think Ireland are going to have much too much quality for Italy on the day. And I think it's going to be a 30-plus point victory for Ireland, depending on which team they put out, of course. But this early on in the competition, I can see Ireland putting out a pretty strong-looking team. Henry, do you agree with that prediction?
Yeah, I mean, I always want Italy to do well. But I think in Dublin, after Ireland's performance at the weekend, I think it would just be too much too soon for Italy. I think there may be the first half an hour, they might show a bit of strength. It might be a bit of a close game. But I think Ireland, unfortunately, will just blow them out of the water after that. I think it will just be a very one-sided affair.
But yeah, I mean, looking forward as well, Italy are due a big scalp, aren't they, again, Toby? If everything gets pulled together correctly and if they can really hurt Ireland during the early stages, do you think they could perhaps cause a scare, at least?
I think there's definitely opportunity for a scare, possibly even for a surprise victory. I mean, I think it's unlikely, as we've mentioned, but Italy do just have something about them. They have that fire, that spirit, and they really showed it against England that maybe they have it for longer in games than we've seen before. And yeah, if they can get on top again, I think that's going to be the key. If Ireland score early and look like they're going to dominate the game, once they have a lead, they can just control it. And I mean, they don't obviously have Sexton's experience to do that, but their side is comfortably good enough to control a game and to ease out a victory, where Italy will probably get more and more frantic trying to get something out of the game, and it'll just open up space and Ireland will probably be able to find their way through. And I think they'll look to go big and dominate up front as well. They've got a strong pack, Ireland. As you mentioned, the second rows already, they'll look to utilise them, big ball carriers, win line outs, try and disrupt Italy's flow. And how Italy will obviously want to play is bring out the back and try and run at Ireland, create space where possible. And if Ireland can disrupt that, which I'm sure they think they will, then yeah, they they should be fine, and it should be a somewhat comfortable victory, if not for a few fleeting moments of magic from the Italians.
So before we wrap up the action for next week's podcast, we are going to look to our new segment now, which is the fantasy segment. Henry, what on earth is going on this week? I thought you were supposed to be a bit of a fantasy whiz.
Yeah, it's not gone too well. I think every single player that I've picked, their partner's done better. I managed to get 0 points on my super sub. I thought Danny Kerr was going to get a try off the bench. Apparently he got 1 metre. Paul Willemser, I didn't even know you could get negative points. I got -1 point with him, getting a yellow card and a red card. I thought, you know, captaining George Ford against Italy is always the motive. Guess not. Even Damian Penno got me 17 points, that was it.
He was absolutely class in the World Cup of fantasy as well. He was getting tries left, right, centre.
David Jenkins sort of let me down a little bit. Sam Underhill, why did I pick him? I should have gone Ethan Roots. Just every single pick I made, I should have just gone with the opposite. The only two that went right for me were P.S. Gohman and Dan Sheehan.
Yeah, looks like the front row were trying to help you out there, but shame the other 13 players were up to the task. I had Finn Russell as captain, and he really pulled me through there with 47 points, doubling into 94, which was, I think, one of the highest scores of the week for the captaincy. But let's look towards next week, because there's no point dwelling on last week's fantasy end. Guys, I'm going to ask all of you for one player who's going to be on your watch list for next week's round. Toby, I'll start with you.
I'm struggling between two here. I'm tempted to say George Ford. I mean, I think England will look to, although he didn't have the greatest game this week, or fantasy wise anyway, I think England will look to try and kick a lot of the ball and a lot of points, and he'll probably he'll probably get you a fair few points that way. Otherwise, I think Damian Penno, as we mentioned, is electric out wide. Scotland France, we've already said, could be a bit of a little thriller there. Could be quite a few tries. I think he's probably got a good opportunity to bag a few where possible. And I mean, as long as the ball gets out to him past that sort of 9-10 access that the French struggle with at the weekend, I mean, I think he's got a good opportunity to bag a few.
Henry, how about you? I mean, I'm not sure if I want to hear your... it's the player that I won't be going for, that's for sure. Go on, let's hear it.
Go for his partner, I think.
I'm going to go rogue. I've already said that I don't think Italy are going to come away with a win. But I think one player that could really impress this weekend could be Monte Ioane. It might just be that a couple of years ago, he scored a couple of absolute worldies and really propelled me up the fantasy leagues for one weekend only. But I think if anyone's going to get a try for Italy this weekend, it will be him. If anyone's going to be making ground, it will be him. I think he might be the bright light for Italy.
Yeah, and I mean, before we finish off, I guess you all are eager to hear who I think's going to impress on the weekend. And for me, it's going to be Calvin Nash on the wing for Ireland. I think he's going to be in for a hat-trick of tries. He's going to be my captain, and I can really see him impressing, especially after scoring against France. I thought he had a good, solid performance on the wing, and I think he's going to push on now against Italy on the weekend. Yeah, there we go. That's all for this week's pod. You've been listening to The More From Grace, and we will be back at the same time next week. Bye.